Hi there, you are listening to Dear Nelly, sex, relationships and dating from the other side of 40 with me, Nelly Thomas. This podcast is being recorded in the council area known as Maribyrnong in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong peoples of the Kulin Nation and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. If you'd like to support the podcast and keep the lights on, please rate, review, tell your friends and ideally subscribe. And for more information about all of that, see the show notes or go to www.nellythomas.com and follow the links. And one quick thing. Look, this is a sex, dating and relationship podcast for grown-ups. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shits. So how can I put this delicately? Off you fuck.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi everyone, today my co-host is the fabulous comedian, TV presenter and radio superstar, Harley Breen. Now, Harley and I have a really interesting discussion in today's episode about his religious upbringing and how that has affected his sense of sex and relationships, both positive and negative. Harley's been married twice and is co-parenting. He's got 3 kids, one with his ex-wife and 2 with his current partner. They're, I guess, like a big sort of Brady Bunch, and we get into the ups and downs of that. Look, Harley is a really, I mean, he's funny, you know, but he's a really thoughtful guy. So I've given him some of the harder listener calls and letters. As always, we end the podcast on the stupid shit that Harley's exes have done and what his dating deal breakers are. Look, Harley and I are old friends. We're really good friends. We love each other a great deal. And if I do say so, we have a great rapport. So I think you're going to love this episode. All right, enjoy.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Welcome to Dear Nelly, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40.
Hey-ho!
Hey-ho! Oh, God. This episode's going to be loose. I have... Oh, God, you've spilt water.
No, drop the lighter.
The chaos yeah. You can hear in the background. How can I describe Harley Breen? Well, first and foremost, comedian.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
TV personality.
Oh, yes. Done a bit.
Big radio personality.
Yep.
You're not an author yet?
No, I'm not, much to my sister's disgust.
Yes, I bet.
She's been pushing me since I was, before I was a comedian,
yeah,
to write a book.
This is Lois?
Lois, yes. who is a trained English teacher,
yeah,
and still my editor.
Yeah.
If I have to put anything out, yes, into the public, it's got to go to her first.
Off to Lois.
Because, and then she comes back, she goes, do you just put commas in when you're bored? Like, yeah. is that how you...
Do you know, I still remember my first book that I wrote, I got the draft back from the editor with like... so many fucking post-it notes. I have a degree in literature, which,
wow,
makes it even
amazing,
worse, right?
Yeah.
And she says, you've got a very eccentric punctuation style.
I'll write words sometimes and my computer goes, no, I've got nothing.
Yeah,
I'm out. I have no idea what
that
you're trying to
no
write.
That makes no sense. You know what, though? You're good with words.
Yeah.
You're good with words.
I probably see myself, because of all those things you listed,
yeah,
as a writer.
Yeah.
Because even if it's not pen on paper, it's in my head.
It's in your brain.
So for radio, for television, for stage, it's all writing.
And you've got a brain that works 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's flat out.
Like there's a lot of words
flying
around in there.
Yeah. There's a story happening that people can hear, and there's four others happening in the head at the same time. And they're fighting each other.
Having been in a Tarago with you for some time, for 30 years, there's times where I go, you actually remind me of my youngest daughter, where I'm just sometimes I have to go, Mum needs a rest now.
That's enough.
Yeah. Hey, Mum, this YouTuber. Hey, this. Did you see this thing on TikTok? Can I just explain this episode of Stranger Things? You can, but Mum needs a lay down first.
But see, I need that from myself.
Yeah.
I'll go, all right, mate, it's time to go nice.
Might need an Auntie Val to lay down.
Yeah.
So you and I have known each other a long time.
Yeah, my first proper tour was in 06 with you in Western Australia.
Yes, indeed, for Roadshow.
That's right.
And then by way of background, which I think will be relevant to our discussions today, you and I worked on a few sex ed shows for teenagers. Yes. So Condom Dialogues, No Means No Show, The Talk. One of my highlights of my career is our text exchanges.
Yes.
Because I'm writing material for the show and I'm like, I need a word for balls.
Mm.
Hey, Harley, just a text out of nowhere. What do you call balls?
I remember you sent me an email once that said, hey, can you send me all the words you know for vagina?
Yeah.
And it was like there was smoke coming off the keyboard.
And you've never been more excited in your life.
Woo-hoo!
And the emails went for days. Now, let's start, as I always do in the podcast, with your...
Fandango's my favourite, by the way.
Mine is Breakfast of Champions. But that's a whole other story. We always start with your relationship history.
Oh, yes.
So can we take us back to Harley the teenager? Were you dating? Did you have relationships? Where'd you start?
Well, I think it would be remiss of me to not include the fact that I grew up in a very conservative, strict Methodist household, which... like most religions, are obsessed with sex.
Absolutely.
They do not stop talking about it.
You doth protest too much.
Yeah, my whole upbringing, it felt as soon as I was sort of out of that Sunday school age and into youth group sort of age, that anything you went to, whether it was the youth-focused church services or camps, it was just sex, 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 but of course, don't do it, don't do it. It's like, can you stop talking about it?
Yeah.
As we're all entering puberty
and
all being very excited by each other, they won't stop talking about how you shouldn't do it.
So you've got this hormonal tsunami and everyone's going, sex is bad, don't talk about sex, sex is terrible, sex, 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 sex.
Yeah.
Oh, wonder if I'll give that a go.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of very childlike relationships.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of you date everybody in the church. It was very incestuous.
So was there hand holding? Like, was there any sort of physical contact?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, I wasn't as bad as some people within church communities, but it was like, so you can't have sex, so it was anything but.
Yes.
And then quite often people got themselves into quite dangerous situations in terms of what they're doing with their bodies because certain places need a lot of preparation.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, I can't have penis in vagina is the only form of sex.
Yeah, that's what sex is.
Because it's Christianity.
Yeah.
So I'll just do anything else.
Yeah.
No talk of consent at all, by the way.
No.
There was never any discussion of that. Consent was just marriage.
And this is the big thing, you know, that you and I are in furious agreement about. If you don't talk to kids about sex, it's not that the lack of information makes them not have sex. It means they're having sex without information.
That's right.
And they are far more vulnerable physically, emotionally, even spiritually.
Totally. Yeah, like, absolutely.
They just don't know what's going on.
And so I think my parents were doing their best within a pretty toxic environment on that level. Mm. And I think Mum and Dad have a great relationship. But I think they did us a disservice on a lot of different levels, but mainly around the fact that sex only exists within marriage, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then, so I didn't, I probably would say that my first relationship then would be my first sexual relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was, just to take you back a minute, what was your attitude toward, or what did you learn about masturbation?
Also couldn't do it.
Couldn't do so it. Don't but upset. Were you doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When I was 15, I think was the first time. It was a fairly late bloomer for a boy. And remember it because I wrote comedy about it.
Yes.
So you've got stories.
I'm asking like I don't know. Yeah. I know the stories.
and the joke I said at the time, which is not far from the actual truth, was when the orgasm happened, it was a complete shock to me.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, I didn't know that was going to be the result. And so called my mother.
Oh, bless you.
Because I thought I broke my cock.
Yeah. So turns out you'd just opened up a whole field.
Yeah, at night. But then I actually, so I called mum and we had a very awkward conversation at the door of the bathroom. And I think she was like, oh, please, just don't talk to me about it.
Yeah.
And quoted something from the Bible about not being able, not allowed to do it. Anyway, then I hid underneath the piano and called my best friend, who was a doctor's son and a nurse's son. And I still think it's quite amazing that he took that call and was really great.
Good.
Was really no shame. Was, hey, mate, you're fine. That's really normal. I'm happy for you. As a 15-year-old boy to be able to provide that kind of support, I think it's
incredible. But also, well done to little Harley, because there was part of you that knew you needed another point of view.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
you know, like I can imagine a lot of kids in that situation, and we know there's kids in this situation because we talked to them at the shows that we did.
Yes.
Who would then go, well, I have broken it.
Yes.
And I am going to hell.
Yeah.
And I'm going to die or I'm going to be injured or whatever. It actually reminds me of when I got my first period, I thought I was dying.
Yeah, wow.
Because no one had told me.
It. Well, look, why would you think anything else?
Blood's coming from your nethers.
Blood's always bad. Now I'm bleeding.
What the fuck do I do
out of
this?
My Fandango.
Out of my lunchbox. My lunchbox is leaking. And, of course, we laugh about it, but there's so much damage that's done in that. There's so much shame. And then I think when you do start dating, you're in a really vulnerable position. In your situation, really – the advice I imagine or the prevailing attitude is if I do want to have sex, I have to get married.
Yes.
So you get married young.
And heaps of people did.
Yeah.
I got married young, but I'd left the church and lost my virginity, not to the woman that I first married. And I don't think it was just religion that meant we got married young, but so many of the people in my life got married, you know, like 24 was old.
Yes.
Which is... You know, I'm only 43 in 4 days.
Yeah. Whereas if one of your kids, you've got three kids, if one of them wanted to get married at 24, I assume you'd be saying, maybe wait a bit.
Yeah, I would go, hey, why don't you just think about it? Let me tell you a story.
If you still love them in 3 years, great. Yeah.
Well, just don't get married.
Yeah, well, there's
that.
It's all right. There's that.
Start saving because I'm not paying for it.
So do you mind telling us what age were you sexually active?
22.
22. So again, relatively late bloomer.
Yes.
But I think that's an interesting thing that we don't talk about enough too, because there's this idea in the ether, particularly for parents of our age, they're all fucking.
Yes.
They're all doing it. Yeah. They're not.
No, they're not.
They're not all doing it. A lot of them are, and we can't like bury our heads in the sand, but there are plenty of kids who are not ready.
Yeah, absolutely.
At school or even uni or TAFE or work. And they are 22, 23, 24 before they have sexual contact, and that's also fine.
Well, it's kind of – it's not a direct parallel, but I talk very openly about everything in our house.
Yeah.
Whenever a question is asked, it gets given an answer.
Yes.
You have to choose age-appropriate ways to answer those things. But when it comes to drugs and alcohol, for instance, I don't hide anything from my kids. Again, there's age-appropriateness to what they need to know about dad at this point. But my go-to is wait until you're 25. The law says that you can do some things at 18. I think you should wait until you're 25 because that's when your brain finishes growing, and that's I'd probably say the same about a sexual relationship. I wouldn't give the timeline of 25, but I would say you don't need to rush
There's
to this.
There's no rush.
You know,
yeah.
But always be – we're a very open, honest house. Yeah. I feel – really fortunate that I've got a partner like I have, the mother of my second two children, and how open and honest we are around the kids, and that we talk, and that they see affection and they see naked bodies. So I hope that without that shame like that I grew up with, that they will have a better chance.
They will.
Fuller, healthier relationships.
The research is very clear that they will.
Yeah.
You know, and you can, and without, you know, not in any way trying to shit on your parents, but you've broken a generational problem there.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and well done.
Thanks.
Like, you that's were a really big help. Good. Oh, well, stop it. So if we go back, the first time you have sex, you've come out of this really religious environment. There's a lot of guilt and shame. Mm. You lose your virginity. Did you feel guilty? How'd you feel?
Absolutely. Right. Well, then I immediately felt like I was going to have to marry that person. And yeah. I already had identified that I needed to not be with that person.
Right.
But we had... Well, I mean, I suppose I didn't identify that before I had sex, but it was a fairly... it was a rough relationship.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of guilt, but at the same time, there was a moving away from my belief system anyway.
Mm.
And it was, you know, you have sex and it was like the third eye was opened up. And I was like, hold on, I think everything was bullshit.
You know when they said this was dirty and horrible? It was really good.
It felt really good.
Oh, my Lord.
Maybe the God was made up. Yeah. And so all of those things were happening at the same time.
God, that's a lot.
I'd left the church, which was for the first 20 to 22 years of my life was my entire life. That was my community. And so I left that. I left my faith. I lost my virginity. Yeah. And then I left home. And like as in I moved from Queensland to Melbourne.
Yeah.
All within that 12-month period.
The main reason I wanted to do this podcast is because I think the prevailing idea in the ether about aging is, you know, turning 40 is a disaster. I'm like, I've never been happier in my life.
Mm.
To go back to the 20s, like my story is different to yours, but a similar amount of confusion.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that for anything.
No.
Like I'm so much happier in myself now. I understand myself more. That what you're describing to me just feels like anxiety and chaos.
20s were absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Absolutely a roller coaster of disaster after disaster. Mm. I mean, there was a lot of fun.
Yeah, sure.
But, yeah, I fell – for me it was about 35 where I started to come into my own self and my own body and go, oh, fuck.
Oh, I've got feelings.
I didn't need to worry about all that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So – you have that relationship. Now we flash forward, you get married at 24.
Yes.
How does that happen?
So that relationship lasted for around a year. And in a way I left Brisbane to get away from it.
Yeah, right.
I
you didn't know how to extricate yourself.
No, and I had. Like I'd broken it up, but there was it wouldn't stop.
Yeah.
And it was fairly easily coerced into things. I had a friend at the time who was like, listen, I'm going overseas and I'm going to go to Melbourne first. Why don't you come with me to Melbourne? And so I packed two bags and left Brisbane, and that was 21 years ago.
You found your people.
Yeah, never went home.
Yeah.
And then within a week of being here, I met Therese.
Yeah.
And within a month, we were together, and within maybe 3 months, we were engaged.
Wow.
And then married within the year.
Wow.
Like, and it was a lot of emotion between the two. It was a very passionate, explosive kind of relationship.
Volatile. Yeah. And how long were you married for?
About 9 years. But
in
that 9 year period, it was break up, get back together, break up, get back together, break up, all of that.
Yeah, have a kid.
Yeah. And then the last time got together, had a kid.
Yeah.
And then my eldest was two, and I just went, oh, this is not getting any better. And I think it's better for all of us.
Absolutely. But I also remember at that time, like, you were very conflicted about getting divorced.
Absolutely.
Like, it's – and what do you attribute that to, your upbringing or your personality or the fact that you had a kid or all the things?
Nothing to do with my upbringing. By that stage, I have completely got rid of the shackles of that religion and that shame that I sort of grew up with. And I feel really, to use a funny word, blessed that I've been able to shake that shit off.
Yes, for sure.
Hell is a construct that was created to control humans. I'm fully aware of that.
You've done some thinking.
Done a lot of thinking, a lot of exploring, a lot of talking. And so on that level, the divorce had nothing to do with that.
So what was the reluctance? Because you knew it was done.
Yes, absolutely.
So what was the reluctance?
A sense of responsibility and commitment and being loyal to what you've said.
Because you'd said you'd stay.
Yes.
And you've got a kid.
And the kid is the main thing.
Yeah.
And I would say this now. I think my decision was correct.
Yep.
But for anyone who's thinking about a divorce with children, make sure it's the only option.
Yeah, yeah.
because it's the fucking... I think I said this to you.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
It's the hardest thing that you'll do. It doesn't mean that it's not correct,
right,
but it's so difficult, especially when a kid's involved. And some dads will just fuck off.
Yes.
I'm not that.
You didn't want to... No, you're not that sort of man. You're not that sort of person. I think it's also interesting, though, to reflect, looking now, we're, what, 14 years or whatever we are down the track. If you two had stayed together, I think your child would have learned all the wrong things about relationships.
Correct. Yeah, you absolutely.
Know? So if we look at it in terms of health and well-being for everyone involved, including the kid, actually it was a good decision.
Yeah, because since he's five, he's been around Hannah and I.
Yeah.
And he's seen
a loving relationship.
A loving, healthy relationship, yeah.
So you married Jens. Is it fair to say you then sow some wild oats?
I did sow. I went oat sowing.
And how did you go about that farming?
Your seed
was scattered.
Yeah, I didn't love it, actually.
No, you know what? This is funny, actually. I reckon people who know your stand-up and the way that you present is like you'd be a real fuckboy. But you're actually such a sweet man. Oh, and you really are, though. Like, I think there's a real – because of how you look – and because of your voice and your accent and you've got a big personality, you just think, oh, he'd fuck anything that moves.
Yeah.
That is not you at all.
No. No, it was – so I only had two sexual partners when my marriage broke down.
Yeah.
Or ended. Breakdown's a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
And then, I wanted to have adult connections, but no relationship.
Yes.
And
that's hard.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
And – I now know in hindsight, I tried to be as honest as I could with the different people that I was hooking up with. But I think there's a connection that you have when you connect sexually that I don't think it's impossible to just have casual sex, but I think it's fraught with danger. And
I think the thing that I noticed when I went back into the dating pool, because I was the same, I guess the best description was I wanted like a friends with benefits.
Yes.
I didn't want to jump into another marriage or a full-on relationship. I didn't want it to be a one-night stand either.
Yeah.
The thing that I found, though, is that no one knows themselves. Even people who go, that's what I want too, two dates in, they're like, oh, no, I didn't really want that. You're like, oh, well, now we're fucked.
Yes. Well, I literally said within the last few days to Hannah, if she died, I would probably just go to a prostitute.
Right.
Like I would.
I think sex worker.
Sex worker, sorry.
Yes, correct.
I would.
What a weird thing to say to your wife. How the fuck did that come up?
I was like, if you die, I'm going to fuck a hooker.
How's your pillow talk? When you die, I'll just go to a brothel.
It wasn't out of the blue.
I've just said you're the loveliest man on earth. Oh, my God.
It wasn't out of the blue. It was within the context of that, exactly what we're talking about, that sort of connection with people. And a sex worker is a professional that I actually have a lot of respect for. And I think there's a they meet a need in society. Mm. And I'm in my soon-to-be mid-40s. What am I going to... Go out into the dating world again? I think we're actually talking about me coming on this podcast.
Well,
just pay someone to get the job done.
It's interesting because I think what I hear when you say that is that relationships of any kind are work.
Absolutely.
And they're complicated and people are complicated. And you're saying where you are now mentally, if you were ever single again, you wouldn't want to do that again.
No, I don't think I would because I have a lot of relationships that I care for and that I work on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all hypothetical, right? Of course, I don't want Hannah to die. But it's like – and I'm not announcing anything here on the podcast.
You're going to be in the Daily Mail. You can't
see that. Harley Breen wants wife to die.
Email Harley. Do not contact me.
But, you know, like
You're speaking to an issue that I think is very relevant to a lot of listeners. I hear this a lot. I've been through this myself. When you come out of a long-term relationship and you're not ready to start again, it's really hard. On one level, you go, I can rip up the script.
Yes.
Right? I don't have to do the same thing again. But on the other level, there is a prevailing narrative in society. This is what you do.
Yes.
When you start dating someone, then you become exclusive, then you move in together, then you get married, then you da 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 da. And if you don't want that, it's actually quite difficult to find another person who wants what you want.
And I've been following this Instagram account that I really quite like called Bad Dates of Melbourne.
I love it.
And so I'm reading it, and it makes sense, I think, that most of the stories are written by female contributors about male interactions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you read it and go, fuck. And then I'm identifying some of the things that I may have done when I was out doing my oat sowing. And I'm like, I don't want to be a part of that in any way anymore. And I also think it's very hard to establish a truth with someone if you say, hey, all I want to do is have a physical connection with you and let's enjoy that, but then nothing more than that. And they go, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
You will connect. Somebody will go, oh, actually, I have a feeling. And then you're hurting a friendship.
Or the possibility's always there.
Yes.
You know, that's the truth. The possibility's always there. That's very interesting. There's so much heteropessimism.
Yeah.
Right? The amount of, and I'll play you some calls. We're coming up to those soon. The amount of women who call into this podcast and my previous podcast, and they're just like, I can't find, where's the straight guys?
Yeah.
Like, I can't find one that's decent.
Yeah.
And I think someone like you, who I think is decent, is then like, I'm not dating.
I don't want to be part of the problem. I don't want to
be part of that. So we flash forward, you remarried.
No, well,
we're not in a conceptual sense.
Yeah, we're not married.
Not legally married, but you're married.
We're engaged. I proposed.
Yeah.
It was a really fun story. And then we just didn't stop having children.
Yes. How long have you been together now?
Be about 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, that's married.
Yes.
You've got kids. You've been together 8 years.
Yeah.
And do you mind if I ask how that's going?
I think we're doing really well.
Yeah.
We started couple counselling.
Yeah.
We've done about, I don't know, eight sessions.
How are you finding that? I've got some firm views.
I just said to Hannah, I think we need to move on from from the counsellor. I think she's great.
Yeah.
But it's sort of, I just feel like we're going in and saying the same thing. And then she's sort of telling us what she thinks. I'm like, okay.
Okay. Did you do that thing that I reckon so many people do? None of us admit to it, but I'm going to admit to it. Where you go into couples counselling, you think, oh, they'll see.
Yes.
They'll see.
Absolutely.
And they'll go, Nellie, you were all right.
Yeah, totally. I've already done jokes about it. I was on radio. I was just like, at the end of the session, I'm like, so who wins?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Which one was right?
Yeah.
Who was wrong?
Give it
to
me.
Yeah.
Let's get a point
system.
I know.
I know you bloody know. Yeah. Who's the problem?
Yeah. But I think what it's done is it's allowed me to speak calmly about things that have annoyed me.
Yeah.
So that Hannah can hear me say that to another person, because the counsellor just the other day said, oh, you're very good with words and very calm when you're speaking. I went, yeah, well, I'm in a psychologist
room. Right.
I'm on my
you
best
see
behaviour.
Me in the kitchen.
Exactly. I just lose my mind and it gets off track. So I think that's been really good.
It focuses you.
Totally, and it keeps you on track.
And so, I think that I reckon if there is something positive to be gained from couples counselling, it's that. Having a witness does actually make everyone behave better.
I think that's probably the best that we've got out of it.
Yeah.
I think where our relationship struggles, and one of the reasons that we're there, is we have there's a communication block between the two of us.
Oh, fuck. I'm so sick of communication blocks.
Yeah.
Isn't that, it's like, that's all you hear from couples who are in trouble. And truthfully, most couples you talk to are in trouble at some point. Yeah. It's like, well, we have this trouble with communication. It's like, why can't we communicate?
Yeah, totally. And because Hannah's an exceptional communicator.
Yeah, yeah.
But then on certain levels of stuff I need communicated, I'm like, you don't talk to me.
Yeah.
And so
I
think that's been really good to be in that space with that neutral person and then we're talking better now. I mean, just the other day she did something that was really trivial and the counsellor had told me, he said, well, bring it up in the moment. And I'm like, well, I don't.
You can't always though.
So I did. I went, just so you know, this is why that's frustrated me.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, okay. And I was able to do that because she was in the room when someone told me to do it.
Yes.
So I was like, well, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Here it is. There's no malice. I'm just letting you know this is how I'm feeling about this. And it was good. And we sort of moved on from it and it didn't become a thing.
That's good.
Normally would fester in my head.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd play 100 scenarios around in my head and have an argument
and
with
I'm going to say this.
Yeah. And like she hasn't even been a part of the conversation.
Oh, totally.
And I've had a full blast at her in my head.
And I tell you what, you can do that in dating as well, right?
Absolutely.
When you're not seeing the person and you're waiting 3 days for a message. Wow, this has happened.
Yes.
And
you
she
create
did
all
this,
of these scenarios.
And who did it? Yes. And you're like, they don't even know you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
Right, and you can do the same thing in marriages. So my thing with couples counselling, I think all of that's very true and can be very helpful. The thing that bothers me about it is that they have usually an unspoken and maybe even unconscious bias toward the couple staying together. That is not always the best thing.
No.
You know, if you're talking about health and well-being, sometimes I wish they'd just go, look, you two, it's done.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like we can't talk this through anymore. You can be mates or you can co-parent or you can whatever. Yeah. And I just think there is a, which is ironic given it is a field of science, there is actually a Judeo-Christian overlay of the prevailing narrative is man, woman, stay together.
I'd agree with that.
That's what bothers me.
The only other couples counselling I've done was at the end of my first marriage, we actually went to a separation counsellor.
Mm.
And to talk it through.
Yeah, and was that helpful?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see
from
the value
the very,
in that.
The very
definitely.
First appointment,
yeah.
She established, do you want to try and fix this relationship?
Yes, great.
And I said, absolutely not.
Yeah, we're done.
I want us to figure out a way to
co-parent. Yes, yeah. And I can absolutely see the value in that. And particularly in that first couple of years at least after a divorce, it doesn't matter how great you are, there's heat.
Oh, absolutely.
There's heat in the kitchen.
Yes, totally.
So having another person there to kind of go, let's calm it down, think about the kids, that's actually a really valuable thing.
The best thing that person, I don't think we've done great at this, but the best thing that person said to us was, you've got to see your child as a business.
Interesting. Tell me more.
And you're running this business together.
Yeah.
And that means you have to have a dialogue together to make decisions on how this business is going to go.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I did look at my child and go, that's the shittest business I've ever seen.
Oh, you cost
it is
a
not
lot.
In profit.
You are not taking profit. Oh, my God. I just paid the school fees for my oldest kid. Public school.
Yeah.
Free education. Yeah. $1,100, I think.
Nah.
By the time I did all the things?
It says voluntary contribution.
Oh, mate, don't
so
even
I'm
get
like,
me started.
Voluntary, not
contributing.
Contribute.
Now, tell me, how's the co-parenting going? Because that's another thing we get a lot of questions on. You're a blended family. You're a little Brady
family.
Bunch.
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think we've talked enough together about how to raise Leonard, but I also think we're very lucky to have an exceptional kid.
Yeah.
It's one of the most unique people I've ever met.
Yeah, yeah.
And
little cool human.
He's pretty cool. And I have a very open relationship with that kid. And I know that he has a good relationship with his mother. And I've got friends who co-parent and they've got like a contract and what I will do and what you, we don't have any of that. And
you've got a handshake agreement.
We've got a bit of a handshake and it's very fluid. I'm the main problem in the fluidity because I'm a touring comic. So when I'm home, I'm home.
Yeah.
I'm there. I'm a really handy
24/7.
And when I go, I'm off.
Yeah.
So the pandemic was really great 2 years for Leonard and I.
Yeah.
A lot of hard times.
Yeah.
A lot of explosions during remote learning.
Yeah.
And then I went, this is to the detriment of my relationship with my child. Mm. School can fuck right off.
Mm.
And things got a lot better. And then, you know, time keeps going and he starts to mature. And, yeah, I think it's good. I think in about 2 years, 3 years' time, it's going to be like nothing ever happened because his independence will increase. He'll be
able because he's nearly a teenager.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it reminds me of, I heard this phrase that I really hold on to, the idea that you can be friendly and not friends.
Yes.
You know, you don't have to. It's not always something that you can achieve with an ex. In an ideal world, you'd be great friends.
Yeah.
And I've seen that modelled and I'm lucky enough really to have that with my ex. But you don't have to have that to be good parents. You can be civil. You can be friendly. And I, by friendly, I mean you're being polite and you're being totally. As open as you can be without going, you're one of my best friends and I'll love you forever and I'm going to ring you if something happens. Yeah. You know, you seem to have been able to achieve that, even though it's been hard.
Well, just the other the end of last year at primary school graduation, Leonard was the entertainment.
Yeah, of course.
He was playing an hour of improvised guitar.
Oh, an hour? Oh, my God.
He didn't end up doing that and it wasn't improvised.
I'd be just stabbing my own eye with a fork.
He was playing sick guitar riffs. Yeah. He's like playing Neil Young and Guns N' Roses.
But all the other parents are going, when's my kid on?
It was only him. Oh, and a mate that he dragged in to be the drummer. She had to learn the drums.
Oh, I love it.
And he turns up in a denim jacket and a bright pink dress. And he just looked rock and roll. Yeah. Like, I was like, you're so cool. And then
David Bowie just walked in.
Yeah, and he looks like Bowie.
Yeah.
And then my ex-wife and her new partner turned up. My ex-in-laws, Leonard's grandma and granddad were there. And then Hannah, my two small children.
Yeah.
And we all sat on the same picnic rug.
Love it.
And I'm like, well, this is actually pretty incredible.
It absolutely is.
To be able
is.
To be all here together and celebrate that kid that's just gone through primary school. And, and
he will
be
remember
together.
That.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're one of the few people, I think, who will appreciate this without thinking it's completely weird. We've just had my first Christmas with my new partner, right? So Lauren and I had Christmas together, her daughter, my two kids, my ex-husband, her ex-boyfriend and his new girlfriend.
Amazing.
Not new girlfriend. She's been around for a long time. But all of us together had Christmas at my place. And I was like, we had the best day.
I bet you did.
Lovely. Lauren was lovely. Locke was great. Brendan and Cecily were great. The kids had a great time. We played in the pool. We did presents. There wasn't – it actually wasn't weird, but you tell other people that and they're like, how does that work? And you're like, because we all just want that to be good for the kids.
Totally, because it's all about them.
You know, they had a beautiful Christmas.
If they didn't exist, you wouldn't have done that Christmas.
Absolutely not.
It's insane.
Yeah. Although I would have done it for the material. But yes, you know, like it's better for everyone. Not everyone can achieve that. Like if you've got disastrous exes, if you've got a lot of acrimony, if you've had – abuse, all that, like, all those caveats in place.
Of course.
But if you can do that picnic for Leonard's graduation, do it.
Absolutely. And I think we've been given the wrong narrative so much around relationships.
Oh, haven't we?
Is that the thing that is a success is a monogamous relationship that stays together forever.
Forever.
And anything that isn't that is a disaster and a failure.
Yeah.
It's why I don't like, you know, a broken home, a breakdown.
Yeah, I hate
anything
that shit.
Negative.
Yes.
But we're starting to see, or maybe I'm more tuned into it, but you're seeing narratives around blended families in Hollywood movies and TV shows now, and you're like, oh, that's great. It's starting to normalize it because it's the most common.
Well, but it's also can be healthier. You can be broken and together.
Yeah.
Like how many times do we see that? I've said this before on the podcast, but I'll say it again. It's like I hear someone go, whoa, isn't it amazing? They've been married for 50 years. And I go, No. I want to know if it's a good relationship.
Yes.
If it's been a good relationship for 50 years, bravo. Tell me more.
Yeah.
But we all know people who've been together 50 years who fucking hate each other and have ground each other into the ground.
Yeah.
You know, that's not healthy.
Shout out to mum and dad.
Yeah. No shame.
They just had their 49th wedding anniversary.
Did they really?
Just a week ago,
Oh, incredible.
Which I'm in awe of. I think they're, because I truly think their relationship is great. Whatever. I think they did us a slight disservice because they made it look to me and my three siblings like that's normal.
Yeah,
like what they have is normal,
and maybe
and
even easy.
Yeah, and it's easy, and it's fine. And they had this; they had a very clear. They treated it like a business. Mm. They had a very clear plan together as a relationship and how they were going to raise their kids. And they had a handbook that was the Bible that they got to go to, and that's how they did things. And I'm not saying it was easy for them.
No,
but they made it look like you'll all just go off and have
and
easy relationships.
Are they loving toward each other?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. See, absolutely. that is special.
Yes.
Because I think there's lots of parents of our, you know, our parents' generation where you go, oh, yeah, you know, they're nice enough to each other and they potter around and they get along and da-da-da. But to see them be loving.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's special.
I've definitely grown up my entire life and still now in my 40s seeing my mum and dad.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cuddle each other and kiss each other and and mostly speak fondly of each other.
Yeah, what a thing to live up to, you poor bastard.
Yeah, no, assholes.
Should we take some listener calls?
Yeah.
Is a bad date story for you. So, very brief snapshot. This was the very first date I went on after breaking up from a long-term relationship. Didn't meet this person through online dating, wasn't comfortable to do that just at the time. So it really went from bad to worse, and arranging to go for drinks and dinner probably wasn't the best idea in hindsight, but hey, it's a story. So we arranged to meet, met at the train station, which was close to the venue that I had picked. I had changed clothes at work, wanted to look nice and, all the rest. So we met at the train station. I get there first. He sends me a message saying he's on his way. And when he rocks up, he's in tracksuit pants, a hoodie, and wearing a bum bag. I was like, okay, interesting. Let's see how this goes. Makes me sound a bit shallow, but anyway. The conversation just went from bad to worse and it kept going downhill. Needless to say, there wasn't a second date. He wanted one.
Oh, okay. I think we got cut off at the end there, but So first date, long-term relationship.
Yeah.
She's going, I've got to get back in the game. We're not sure how they met. Right, she's thinking, I might zhuzh myself up a little bit.
Put some
whatever that means. I might put on a frock. I might put on some lippy.
Yeah.
I meet you at the train station. And he rocks in with his bum bag and his tracky ducks. Is it superficial to go, no fucking way?
Well, first of all, it's hard to know this woman's age, but she doesn't. She sounds maybe around our age.
I know from our email exchanges that she's 40 something.
Right. But that sounds like a teenage date.
Correct.
Like hardcore. Meet at the train station wearing a bum bag. What the fuck's going on?
And I bet it wasn't one of those, like, you know, those Tommy Hilfiger bum bags that's like across the chest and da, da, da. He's got his pack of rollies and he's
I've got a bum bag and that's what I do with that.
That's exactly right.
Because I'm a dad.
But you've let yourself go.
I've let myself go, mate. And where you don't put my keys?
You don't have to woo anybody.
I can love a bum bag. You got everything you need right there. Now, here's the thing. She's told us what he's wearing, but we don't have a great description of how that came together. Like you say, that could look pretty good.
It could.
You know, I've seen an image of Beyonce in tracksuit pants and bum bag, but I bet you this guy didn't look like Beyonce.
No.
I would say that it shouldn't matter too much.
Yeah.
However, I like to present myself well, mostly when I go out.
Yes.
You know, I'm rarely on stage without a button-up shirt on.
Yeah.
I think in general, if you're going to go out, even if you're just going out for a drink with a mate, you take the trackies off, put on some pants.
Unless you're a rapper.
Maybe.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Or you're Paris Hilton and you're in a velour tracksuit.
Or you need to rob something on the
which may be the case.
There might be a fence you need to get over.
Do you know what? I reckon, and I'd love your perspective on this, because I think for a lot of women listening, they'll be like, on the one hand, you're torn, because you're like, it is superficial. Who gives a fuck what someone wears? Like, you wouldn't date someone, like, reject someone based on, I don't know, their haircut or something. On the other hand, you go, if he's putting in that little effort.
That's correct.
On our first date.
Yeah.
Where are we going to be in a year?
Totally.
Or 10 years? And what else is he not putting effort into?
Yeah, I would just turn around and get on the next train.
Yeah, I think we're done.
Yeah.
I don't think that you're allowed to have – there's some situations in which I think you're allowed to have a bit of superficiality.
Yeah.
Right? You're allowed to be exclusionary with who you live with. You're certainly allowed to be exclusionary with who you fuck.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
If he rocks up and you go, you're not for me.
Yeah.
I think that's okay.
I think, and trust your intuition too. Yes. When you see people, I feel like our job as comedian, whether we were good at it beforehand, trains us to be really good at reading people.
Correct.
You see a person and you can do snap judgments.
Yes.
And they say, don't judge a book by its cover. Yeah. Well, sometimes you should.
Well, and in this case, I don't think it's so much about the cover. It is about the effort.
Yes.
It is what does it say in your mentality that you are getting ready for a date with me and you didn't think about what to wear?
Yeah, totally.
That's what would bother me about it. It's not the actual outfit.
But maybe he saw her and the effort she'd put in and he felt overwhelmed by that. He was like, oh, man, I just thought this was a casual
hookup. But they know it's a date. Yeah. Even if it's a hookup, put a fucking shirt on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Totally. Have a shower.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bar's too low.
Yeah, you can't be. Yeah, you look, tracksuit pants are not for dates. There's too many tracksuit pants. And for that matter too, I'll do a pile on. Fucking women in tights out in public, not on their way to or from an exercise situation.
Leggings or underwear.
What are you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm judging.
We went to the zoo the other day. Yesterday, actually, we all went to the zoo as a family. I tell you what, the animals that I liked looking at were the fucking bogans. They all go to the zoo. They're hectic. And you know me, I'm not going to judge a bogan. I'm one step removed.
You just did.
I love them. But the amount of fucking tights
Again, I'm like, look, if you're doing school drop-off, wear what you want. I couldn't give a shit if you come in your dressing gown. But if you're going on a date.
Yeah.
And especially I can imagine the disappointment for this poor woman. She's been in a long-term relationship, I think maybe 25 years long. Like long-term, all right.
That's rough.
Summoned the courage. Oh, my God, this is so exciting. And there's a bloke in front of you in a fucking bum bag and some tracky dacks. Like, sweetheart. You know, the other thing I think it's really important to point out, you know, a la No Means No Show, you're allowed to leave.
Yeah, you can just go.
You're allowed to leave at any point.
Yeah.
You do not have to stay and be quote unquote polite.
Yeah.
I mean, don't just run off, but tell him I'm leaving.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think this is going to work out and you're allowed to go.
I had a date once in my sort of, I was still married, but we were in one of those breakup points. And this girl had come to a show and then she messaged me. She went, do you want to go get a drink?
Oh, great idea.
I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. Let's go get a drink. That sounds fun. And went out for this drink. And
you wouldn't do that again.
No. Within a minute of me being there, she was shushing me.
Oh.
She was like, stop it. Shh. Calm down. I'm like, what? Because, you know, I'm like, woohoo.
Yeah.
And then I went to the bar and got another drink. I came back and I just went, hey, I'm going to go.
Good on you. Good on you.
Like, how's this relationship going to be?
That's right.
You're already wrapping me up.
On the first date. And again, so many women. And some men, but so many women have been socialised to be polite in that situation.
Yes.
And to endure the fucking thing for the next 3 hours.
Yes, correct.
We're old enough. We're too old for that shit.
Totally.
Right? You don't have to be an asshole about it. You just go, look, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Like, thank you for coming. Totally. Put your $50 on the table for dinner or whatever it is and leave.
And the only explanation that other person needs is, oh, it's just not for me.
It's not for me. That's right.
The end of it.
Yeah, you don't have to give any more explanation than that. Yeah.
But if you want to go into it, you're wearing tracksuit pants and a bum bag, you fuckhead.
Call Harley. He'll give you some feedback. Now, our next call, I'm going to give a little bit of a trigger warning because it does involve some discussions of abuse and sexual assault. And one of the reasons I've included this call in this particular episode is because I know you can handle that and you and I have had many discussions about these issues. So as I said, just a little warning, if those things are going to upset you, I would say fast forward about 5 minutes.
Cool.
I'm calling just to give another, I suppose, story or perspective. I've been single for 17 years. In my early 30s, my ex left me for another woman, and he'd had several affairs within our 11-year relationship. So I was with him when I was quite young. We had two children together, and when he left, I had nothing. I wasn't working. I had a 7-year-old and a just going on 2-year-old when he left. And I went into survival mode. From that point, 17 years later, I'm still in survival mode. I also recognize and didn't realize at the time just what such an abusive relationship I had been in and how conditioned I have been whilst he was the father of Mud as well. So moving on, my children now are grown adults, and one has moved out of home and the other one's looking to move out of home, and I'm going to be an empty nester. I haven't dated in that 17 years, really. I've dabbled a little bit, but my problem is I'm terrified. I'm not terrified of dating. I'm terrified of men. I'm scared. I've been abused. I've been raped. I've been poorly treated. I have been manipulated. And I want to love a man, and I want a man to love me, but I'm just so scared. I don't know if other women feel this way. I'd really love to know if there's other women out there who feel similar and how they've gotten over this. I have had counselling, absolutely, lots of therapy, and so have my children. But yeah, I do feel a bit alone, particularly when I listen to, you know, your previous podcast and other women, and just wonder, wow, how do they do it? Would love a little bit of insight, ladies. See what you got to offer. Yeah. And I just love the podcast, and I really am enjoying listening to like-minded women. This just absolutely rocks. Thanks, ladies. Bye.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Harley Brain, what do you think about that?
Well, I feel a genuine sadness for that caller.
I do too.
I heard it in her voice when she said, I just want to love a man.
Oh, I know.
And I want a man to love me.
Yeah.
But then that's also in conjunction with her being honest and saying, I'm scared of them.
Yeah.
Which is what a horrible situation to be in.
Awful.
And I'm trying to think of, well, what advice do you give on how to meet a good man? Because I'm, my struggle with, even when we were doing the No Means No show, was my fear of some of those teenage boys that we had to perform in front of were utter repugnant little shits. And it's because they probably didn't have good men in their life. And then, I was looking down the barrel of my first child becoming a man as well, and I feel a great weight.
They've learned a form of masculinity. I mean, it's thrown around too much, but it's true. They've learned toxic masculinity.
Absolutely.
And what we were trying to do was unlearn it.
Yes.
Help them unlearn it.
Totally.
But the truth is, this woman, I'm guessing, is roughly our age again. Yeah. There's a lot of men our age who haven't unlearned it.
No. I grew up with a very present and quite gentle father, and I have regular instances of toxic masculinity. I can't regulate my emotion. I get really angry. What I try and do, and I think probably a main result of both my parents and how they brought me up, is I unpack that with my children. I make sure that they know that that was my
issue
because I couldn't regulate my emotions, that their behaviour was still wrong, but that they don't wear that, and that I'm raising two boys and a girl at the moment, you know, gender's fluid, but I find more pressure in the raising of my boys than of my daughter.
Because you don't want to raise boys that girls are scared of.
I don't want to raise a man that that woman is scared to be around.
Yeah.
And then I suppose the only other thing I'm thinking, this has been a relatively new thing for me, and there's been a few different messaging on this that has come through into the mind's eye. One of them, and I can't remember his name, but he was Ash Barty's mindfulness coach.
Oh yes, I've heard him speak.
So good. But this is around the loving of yourself and how I've previously heard that term, you know, you got to love yourself, as a very selfish, narcissistic attitude. It's a systematic of a selfish society of capitalism saying you can have it all, you go get it. This guy said it in a way that it got through for the first time. If I love Hannah and I truly love Hannah, why wouldn't I love me?
Yes.
Like, I want her to be around me.
Yes.
Well, then why don't I love me?
And
because I have so much self-loathing for myself. My head's constantly telling me I'm shit and, you know, good at this. And then I look in the mirror and I'm ugly and that's no good. And so for around 12 months, I've been trying to say only positive things about myself when the negative things come into my head. And then I was avoiding mirrors. I was doing that thing where I stand in the mirror, before or after the shower or when I've got ready and look at myself and don't find anything bad about what I'm looking at.
Enjoy it. I'm processing this at the same time because, you know you well enough to be able to say this without it being creepy. You're hot.
Okay.
You know, like you're a good-looking guy. You've always had a lot of attention from women. You're on stage. You know, like you're an alpha without being an asshole. But this is a real reflection of it's what's going on inside.
Absolutely.
Like the mirror lies.
The mirror absolutely lies.
I'm going to give you one bit of advice that someone gave me and also to our caller as just a starting point, which is that every time you get a compliment, you accept it.
Yes. Yes.
Right? So yeah. I would naturally, it's very Australian. It's also quite generous. I was going to say, oh, no. Oh, you look great. Oh, I just got this dress from the op shop. You know, anything to undermine it.
Yeah.
And I've actively for about 5 or 6 years now been going, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, if I do a gig and someone says, oh, you're a really great MC, I go, oh, thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
I really appreciate you telling me rather than going, oh, I actually missed this bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And that bit went over time and da-da.
Yeah.
And it really does start to change how you see yourself. We're all good at something.
Yes, absolutely.
There's always something good about us.
Yeah.
And how we look and what we do and how we are in the world. Yeah. You got to start somewhere.
And this, it's both simplistic and really complex, what that woman called in with.
Yeah.
And loving herself is not going to fix men.
No.
But it will fix her and what she'll accept.
Yeah. And it sounds like she has done, you know, she said she's been getting therapy. She's obviously been reflecting a lot. She's been talking to trusted friends and so on. She's given it, she hasn't just rebounded.
No.
You know, I mean, obviously 17 years is a really long time. But it's a really dangerous thing, even if you haven't been in an abusive relationship, but especially if you've been in an abusive relationship, to jump quickly into the dating game.
Yeah.
So I think she's done all the right things. Like I wonder now that she's a bit older, maybe she needs to get to the point where she's going to trust herself.
Yes.
Because I don't think, and this in no way means that you chose your abusive partner and it was your fault. That's not what we're saying at all. But I reckon you'd pick up red flags quicker.
Yes.
Yep. You're older, you're wiser, you've been there often, and many of us have experienced this. You didn't even know you were in an abusive relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
We didn't talk about that stuff then. We thought it was only if you had a broken jaw that you were in an abusive relationship. Now you know better.
Yeah.
You're in a much better – there is no guarantee of safety.
No. Well, just walking out the door.
Getting in the car.
Some of us have a little bit more safety than others.
Correct. And a man going on a date
has
more safety than a woman. That's the truth.
I remember we did an event together at Fed Square. It was maybe for the Slut Walk or something like that. And you got me on. And there was a film crew there. And they said, we just want to get a vox pop off of you afterwards. And
I remember this. Okay.
What are you going to ask me? And they go, no, we'll just do it on camera. Yeah. I'm like, okay. And they turn the camera on and they said to me, what do you do on a daily basis to protect yourself from sexual assault?
Mm.
And I went, what?
What are you talking about?
Thanks. And that was it. That's all they wanted. Because every man...
We're confused.
We'd go, huh?
Yeah.
And then every woman they asked would list off all these things that they do.
And I distinctly remember it. Me too.
Really stuck with me.
And Tim Costello was after you.
Yes.
And there was a whole range of sort of celebrities answering that question, and I watched every single answer. And I was asked, and I'm like, well, I put my keys between my fingers and I walk under the lights and I go this way and I sit this place on the train. I was not, even as someone who works in that area, conscious I was doing those things. But there is this mental load that women are carrying, and particularly when they come back into dating.
Yeah.
Where they're like, well, how can I keep myself safe? And when there is then something does go wrong, they're told, well, you shouldn't have dated someone on an app.
Yeah.
Like picking up at a pub safer.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Like the truth is, the harsh, horrible truth is there's no guarantee of safety.
No.
But I also think that doesn't mean the risk isn't worth it. In your position, what I'm hearing from her is that she's saying, I want to connect with someone.
Yeah.
I think there's ways that you can do that while mitigating risk.
Yeah.
And do that the best way that you can, and you never know what you'll find.
Absolutely. And join a club. You know, there's so – any kind of club. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Join a community of people who are like-minded.
Cricket club.
Not with the aim of getting in a relationship.
Yeah.
Just join a club and be around people
Yeah.
Because – this is a huge subject to bring up.
Yeah.
But these phones are going to fucking kill us. They are dragging us out of our present self and into this world that isn't real and doesn't exist. And that's also where we're meant to find the love of our life without any other kind of human connection happening on this digital thing. There's so many levels of the phone that is toxic and hurting us. And I think, again, not to the aim of getting in a relationship, but join a club, do something social, be with groups of people, and you'll probably
the bump more into people someone. You meet. Like, I think usually, like, I'm quite pro online dating. I reckon it can be good under the right circumstances,
sure, yeah.
right? And I had good experiences. It depends where you're at. In her particular case, she's feeling so vulnerable that I reckon you're right.
Yeah.
Right? Stay away from that, at least for now. The more people you meet, and also the more friends you tell, don't be shy to tell your friends and colleagues, I'm ready to date.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you know a nice guy?
Totally.
Because you do not know. That's actually how I met Lauren.
Yeah, right.
I told a friend and she went, I think I do know someone. Right? So you don't know. It doesn't always work out. I've set up people before and it hasn't worked out. But you've got more, you're going to feel safer, I think, if you have a personal connection to the person you go on a date with.
Mm.
Like if I set you up with someone, you'd feel more comfortable knowing that I know them.
Yes, yeah.
You know, you've had two people vet them.
Yeah.
It's still not a guarantee, but there's a connection. They're not a complete stranger. It's
funny, when I met Hannah, I was doing a show about how I didn't want a relationship ever again.
Of course you did.
She was the front of house manager at the theatre and I was on stage saying the only women I'm interested in are those that are barren or used to have a dick.
Yeah.
In fact, they could still have a dick. I don't want any more kids.
And now you've got three kids.
Boom.
There you go. So you don't know yourself either.
No.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think normally I would sort of go in when I get this question, it's like you need to make the decision for yourself, and obviously you do, but I also hate when podcasters sit on the fence.
Yeah.
I reckon you should go on a date. I think, but make sure it is in a situation where, like you said, if you join, we had one previous caller who joined a hiking group.
Yeah.
Right, and then she happened to meet a bloke. She didn't join it for that, but she happened to meet a bloke. I think you're going to feel safer.
Yep.
And feel like it can go slower.
Absolutely.
If you meet that way and you can suss him out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because you're in an environment, there's more people around you.
Yeah.
And if you join a club because of something you're interested in.
Yes, you've got that to talk about. You're going to
meet somebody that's interested in that thing.
Correct. And you've got, at the very least, you've got something to talk about.
Yeah.
Together.
Yep.
Yeah. Good luck. Let us know how you go.
Yes.
And I would always say in this situation, and I'm sure you would as well, like we know what it takes to recover from an abusive relationship. It is absolutely momentous and epic and well done. You've looked after yourself.
Raised your kids.
Correct.
Yeah.
Bravo to you.
What a tribute.
And now I really hope it's your time.
Mm.
And I hope you find that bloke. All right, are you ready for a listener letter?
Yeah.
All right, dear Nellie and Harley.
Okay.
Right? Got a really tough one for you. I've really given you the hard ones, Harley.
I'm into it.
I have terminal cancer.
All right. Not you, the person writing the letter.
No, okay. Not that I know of. I'm 65. My girlfriend is 40. I want her to get ready for a life after me. It breaks my heart, but it's for her. She's divorced. She has two daughters. I suggested she try internet dating, but the jealousy killed me, so she stopped. But I've seen several things. One, she totally lacks confidence. I've found that a lot. She needs to build confidence before dating, otherwise she'll never find the right person. Two, every single possible date looks amazing. They sound perfect. I remember this 15 years ago when I was doing internet dating. Every woman was Elle Macpherson or Halle Berry. I met lots of them. They're not what they paint themselves to be. Back to my girlfriend. Although I don't want her to start looking until I'm gone, which is maybe in less than a year, I do want her to know that she can build confidence and that she can go on another chapter, another journey. What should we do?
Wow. Lots in there.
Oof.
I commend that guy.
Yeah, I do too.
For being that opened and understanding what his diagnosis is, and that's you're not going to get around it.
Yeah.
And wanting his partner to find love.
He's facing reality.
Yes.
Right?
There's a movie about this, isn't there?
There is a movie about this, but it also reminds me of the fabulous show you did that the title eludes me now.
Taboo.
Taboo, right? Mm. This is where you did an episode with people who knew that they were dying.
And we just lost one.
I know.
It was only, so 4 years ago we filmed it and Nicole Cooper just passed away from bowel cancer and was an incredible person.
Yeah.
And I actually have spent a fair bit of time over the last week thinking about her and her husband Tim and their little child because she had a brand new baby.
Yeah.
When she got that diagnosis, and that kid would be just on five, I guess.
Life's not fair.
No, it's not. No, it's, you know, it's a clusterfuck at the best of times. Mm. So I've been around this subject matter, and I wonder how that guy is now, and because it's a long burn, a terminal diagnosis.
Yes,
it's not a sudden.
No.
A sudden death scenario. And so I think it's really great they're talking about it. But I think it's sort of, it goes to the last caller. It's a similar kind of thing and because it seems to be around his partner not valuing herself and not loving herself. So I guess it's probably the advice I'm giving to a lot of people about a lot of problems at the moment is you've got to love yourself. You should be your best friend. You're the one that has to go to sleep with yourself and wake up with yourself. And you can't find a person to treat you well if you're not treating yourself well.
Look, I know I don't in any way mean this to be flippant. I mean this sincerely. One of the reasons I love RuPaul and the reason I watch it with my kids is because he says on every episode, if you can't love yourself, how are you going to love anybody else?
Yeah, right.
And I feel like for young people, I've got a 15-year-old, I want her to hear that over and over again.
Yeah.
If you're not in the place where you actually really love yourself, don't date.
No, absolutely not.
Do not date. Yes. You are not ready.
Yeah.
You are vulnerable.
Yeah.
And work on yourself. Build yourself up. Build up your friendships, your interests, all those sorts of things. You can be lonely. You won't die from it.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? You can be lonely and there'll be a point at which you feel better and then you'll be ready.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about this is I love anyone who'll face the reality of shit.
Yes.
And not avoid it. I can't bear denial.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Face the problem.
Yeah.
He is dying.
Yep.
Right. He knows she is going to be vulnerable after he's gone.
Mm.
It reminds me, I don't know if you've ever heard our beautiful mutual friend Maria Bamford talk about this, but when her mum was dying, she set her dad up, like her husband up, with a new woman.
Great.
Like in their 70s or 80s. Like part of me goes, fuck, she's still got a job to do. Like seriously, the shit that wives have to do. But what an act of love.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. She went, I know he needs companionship.
Mm.
You know, and I think this is his vibe. This is our letter writer's vibe. He's like, I want her to have someone after I'm gone, which is a really generous act. The only thing I would say is, and I know he knows this, but it's worth spelling out, it's her decision.
Absolutely.
Right? She might not want anybody.
Yes. Also, I imagine that she quite loves him.
Indeed, and she's going to need some time.
And is going through grief already. Correct. And then is going to need a period of mourning and grief afterwards.
Yeah.
Which doesn't have a timeline.
No.
So probably her head's not in the game at the moment.
Yeah.
Because she's in his world and she wants to, you know, I'm just speculating, but maybe wants to honour him and his life and the end of it. So maybe that other thing will come and it goes back to what we've sort of said about loving yourself. That's the only preparation that she needs.
Yes.
And then let's probably take care of this issue first before we start moving on to other relationships.
I think the brutal truth I think that has to be spoken here as well is that you can't improve her self-esteem, only she can.
Yes.
Right, so if your assessment, and we don't have her side of the story, but if your assessment is that she, you know, is seeing any shiny thing and going, they're amazing, which is a real thing in dating where you can be like blindsided because, you know, it's all new and fresh. Or that she doesn't feel worthy, you actually can't give her that.
Yeah.
You can tell her repeatedly how amazing she is and that you hope she gets there, but she has to do that work.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's internal work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what to say to our caller intern. Like, what do you say to someone who knows they're dying? You know, like all the normal things that we say to someone, oh, good luck and, you know, all of that.
best of luck.
All I can say is that I just, and it's always going to sound cliched and whatever, but it's incredibly brave to face it like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I really respect it.
So do I, absolutely, because really I don't know how I'd be.
I don't either.
I can say what I think I do.
Yeah.
I made a joke about it before we started recording.
Yeah.
You know, I'd just lean
into it. We don't know.
We don't know. So you know, I think the only difference between him and us, though, is he's been given a little bit more of a definite timeline.
Yes, that's right.
You know?
That's right.
We all just don't know.
He's having to face the reality of mortality. But to me, it sounds like, from what we can go on from the letter, he's actually handling it really well.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, hats off. All right, we're going to finish up with two quick segments that we do with every co-host. This one is one of my favourites. It's a bit like, I'm not racist, but it's like, right, no shade on me, ex. You don't have to name the ex, but what is the stupidest thing an ex has done?
Cheated on me at a party I was at.
Oh, stop. Are you serious?
Yeah, I was downstairs and she was upstairs.
No.
And someone was up her.
No.
No, I don't think.
Did you know at the time?
I don't think it was sex. No, no.
How do you know this?
Her best friend told me.
Jesus Christ.
Mm. And I was 19 and had.
Harley. I thought you were going to say someone took the dog. Oh, my God.
Nah, you know. And I had told the friend I was dropping her home. I'd said, I think I'm going to lose my virginity to her.
Oh.
And she went, oh, don't do
that. Don't do that.
And so then told me, which I'm very,
Harley.
Very grateful for. There was, it wasn't just that one incident, but I found that one particularly amazing.
But wow, that's full on. God, 19
Same
year
night
olds.
I tore four ligaments in my right ankle.
Jeez, your 20s were great.
Yeah, I was at this party, right? And I was like, I've run out of darts. I'll go down to the servo and get it, right? So I ran down, and while I was running, I looked down and my shoelace was untied. And I was like, well, to save time, I'll keep running and tie the shoelace up. So I picked up my foot and then my other foot just buckled underneath me.
Oh, she was buckling underneath someone else.
And she was at the party making out with a guy, and I came back and she was, she was so angry at me that I'd come back.
Oh.
I was like, what are you talking? I'm really hurt.
Do you know what? What's classic happening? Sign of cheating.
Yes.
I reckon. Yeah. When someone starts getting angry at you for things that you don't understand. Yeah, they're shitty because you've interrupted their foreplay.
Totally. Correct. And I was in a lot of pain. Anyway.
What are you doing looking at my phone? I wasn't. I was just looking up the weather. Oh, I might have sent a message. Classic tell. Yeah. And
she was
last,
a fuckhead.
Yeah, no shit. Last but not least, you know that TikTok trend, like he's a 10 but. She's a 10 butt, right?
Yeah,
so Jezza Hickey was on, she's a 10 but she wears top hats. So what's your dating deal breaker? Again, could be serious, could be completely superficial and we'll just own it. Someone rocks up in tracksuit pants and a bum bag, ba-bang, or leggings.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Nah, it's all right.
You're not that fussy.
I'm not going to judge. I mean, I judge. But I'm not going to, that's not going to make me end it.
But if you went on a date with someone, would there be something where you
she's a 10, but she's a vegan. I'd be like, fuck off. Off you go. Oh, look, some of my best friends are vegans. But
so why? Just because you love meat so much?
I just think it's an unrealistic, I think they're tantamount to fundamentalist religions.
Right,
vegans.
Right. And you don't like the rules.
Totally. I know that there's people that do it. It's purely just a diet thing. They don't eat meat. I have not met many of those vegans.
Yeah.
I've met a lot of militant. And if I was on a first date and it was, oh, I'm a vegan, I'd be like, let's fucking wrap this shit up.
I don't know if this is going to work.
I own beef cattle. Like, it's not going to work.
Yeah. For me, it would actually be, it would depend how it came up. If they, I mean, there's all those jokes about how can you tell if someone's a vegan? Oh, don't worry, they'll let you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of shit. If you sat down, they went, right, I'm vegan. This is, you know, a big part of my identity. That would worry me.
Yeah.
If we were ordering dinner and they went, oh, I'm vegan.
Yeah.
That's just information. Mm. That would worry me less.
It'd be alarm bells for me.
Right.
It'd be real.
Look, it's your deal breaker, like, not mine.
Yeah.
You're out.
I hooked up with a girl once and we were friends already.
She tasted like seaweed.
I said, she goes, do you want to come back to my place?
Yeah.
And she went, yeah. And I went, I have like a studio. It was a studio apartment at the time. I went, I've just cooked a whole lot of bacon. So the place smells like bacon. She went, oh, I'm a vegan. And I went, oh, maybe we should just not then.
I mean, bacon smells a thing.
It is. That's why I was saying. I was like, you know, I'm very conscious of my space. I was, so look, it might be a bit offensive walking in and just smelling bacon.
Hang
it's
on.
Not normally like that.
So the two highlights for me of this episode are you telling your wife, when you die, I'll see a sex worker. That's how I'll cope. And you telling someone on a date, my studio apartment smells like
Oh. It's pretty bacony in there. I cooked up 2 kilos of this shit. It was on sale.
God, Harley, I mean, what a great meat. You're such a delight. Thank you so much for coming. Will you come back?
Always.
Please.
Anything you do, Nellie.
All right. Thomas. Love you so much.
Love you, mate.
Thank you.
Bye.
Dear Nellie, I could use some advice. Dear Nellie, yes, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nellie, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nellie, there's a lot to explore. Dear Nellie, when you're 40 or more. Dear Nellie, so I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.